Team 33.
Abysmal. The worst thing I can say about it was that, yeah, there were loud, loud boos at halftime, but they were almost being clapped off at full time because the fans nearly felt sorry for them.
Team 33. Live every Friday night on OTB Sports Radio. Download the podcast now in the OTB Sports app.
Just thinking about our chat this morning and thinking about the comments from Jamie Carragher last weekend. I think it was from him where he was talking about Liverpool fans drinking in what's going on at the minute. And I wondered, like, in a real sense, because you can get very caught up with, like, what's happening in any given moment and your opportunity to step back from that and go, actually, this is a golden era for Liverpool at the minute. Are you feeling that fans have that sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I think after the United game at the weekend, everyone tried to just take the evening and the day after to just be like, God, we are so lucky to be witnessing this team and witnessing the players in this team with this manager and everything that he has achieved. I think, like you said, it's sometimes really easy to get caught up in the next game and what's coming next and looking ahead. And ultimately, like Pep Linders said the other day, it's just 3 points. We just go there to get the 3 points. But for us as fans, it's so much bigger than that. And we're really excited and we're really cherishing it. And we know that it's not going to be like this forever. So I think, yeah, trying to drink it in every moment. I think there was a lot of drinks drunk as well on Sunday night.
I presume drinking it in means rewatching the game about 20 times.
Yeah, honestly, I've rewatched the highlights so many times; it's actually ridiculous. But all the media around it has been amazing, and it's a moment in time, isn't it? Like that just doesn't happen every day. You do not ever go to Old Trafford and score five, and I have that amazing atmosphere. I think I wasn't lucky enough to be there, but a lot of my colleagues were, and they were just saying it's sort of once in a lifetime experience, and the atmosphere in the ground felt just incredible. So very jealous everyone was there, but I managed to sort of drink it all in through them.
It does feel like a lot of the analysis afterwards has been about how bad United were. I presume that's leaving Liverpool fans saying like they were that bad because we're that good.
Well, you know what? That they can have their conversations around what's happening in their team. I think for us, we're just trying to focus on ourselves because we know the incredible talent that we've got in the team at the moment. I mean, you can't look at Mo Salah and say that he wasn't incredible, scored a hat-trick, best player in the world right now. We're incredibly lucky that he's playing under us. And I think there's so many standout performances. And if you look on Sunday throughout the team and you're looking at players that were brought in, like Konate, and you're expecting them to maybe have an off day, and he just absolutely smashes it on only his second or third Premier League appearance. And then, you know, there was changes in midfield as well, and every single one of them stepped up and showed what they're capable of, and that's all we can ever ask for as fans. And I think, yeah, a lot of the time people reflect and say Manchester United were really bad. There definitely was elements of that. We all know that they've got a lot of problems to sort out, but equally we punished them, we took our opportunities. There's a lot of times in past seasons where I think we've been there and we've been the better team, but we haven't managed to score, or we've come away with a point. And this time we meant business, and we knew we could come away with all three and do so convincingly. And that's exactly what we did.
You mentioned Kanata. He looked so settled, didn't he? Like, and it was, I know we had live commentary of the game. There was a lot of chat in advance about him starting and whether it was a bit of a brave move from Klopp. It looked as if it was a good call. But just in relation to the stack of players that are available now in that position, when you look at Phillips, Matip, Gomez, is he seen now as Kanata as a long-term foil there for Van Dijk? Or what's the thinking about the potential that this guy can reach?
Yeah, I think ultimately him coming in on Sunday shows the trust that Klopp has in him, and also shows that he really sees the potential that he has. And I think we all can see that. And also, obviously, he's got a big height advantage in those games where you kind of need it. So I think that was maybe why he was brought in as well. I don't think anyone's looking at him as a Van Dijk replacement yet. I think he's a really, really great option to have because we know, obviously, the problems we had last season with our centre-backs. I think at the moment, Van Dijk and Matip is definitely the preferred duo, and they're the ones that seem to be getting the most games. But to be able to have other really incredible centre-backs that you don't even sort of recognise the difference coming in is really great, because last season we definitely didn't have that luxury. So I think he's one that definitely needs a few years under Klopp, but honestly amazing already, and just shows such drive, such confidence. I mean, playing against Ronaldo, and he didn't even look fazed. So yeah, I think a lot of us were very impressed with his performance.
It obviously doesn't matter a whole pile now, but how did you feel when you saw the team sheet last week, Harriet, and that midfield in particular? Like, obviously things, all's well that ends well in the context of last weekend. At the same time, are you looking at that midfield and thinking to yourself, how far can this take us into the season? Or are you saying to yourself, it actually doesn't matter? The way the defence is playing, the way the front three are playing, any sort of midfield combination can slot in and do an incredible job for this team.
Look, I think it's really great thing when Klopp proves that we know next to nothing about football, because I love it when you look at the team sheet and you go on Twitter and everyone's having conversations about why we're going to lose, why it's not going to work. And then obviously we go into the game and it works better than it has done all season. So I think the midfield, obviously with Fabinho out, we were concerned. He's such a good holding midfielder, and he does so well in that position that he is unique in the way he does that. And without him, I think sometimes we struggle. Obviously we had the sort of injury blows out the weekend with Milner and Keita going off. So I think it sort of remains to be seen what happens. But there's a lot of conversations around Liverpool and our midfield, and it's such a difficult midfield to play in, is what I would say, because we have such a distinct style and our defensive line plays so high, and you know, we've got three world-class forwards, so it's a very difficult place to slot in. But I think now we've got a few boosts. We've got Fabinho hopefully back this weekend, Curtis Jones is back now, so Henderson is still seems to be fit, and Kate is not as bad as we first expected, so I think there's a lot of positivity around it, and maybe not as bad as we expected.
Because some of the conversation last season was not only about the absence of Van Dijk and Gomez, but also because of the fact that Fabinho and Henderson had to be pulled back into midfield. And I guess, if anything, this is just proving the importance in particular of Jordan Henderson. Not that it needed any proving to Liverpool fans, but just what a vital midfielder he is in terms of adding that extra layer of protection, amongst other things.
Oh, absolutely. I think you saw last season when both him and Fabinho were pulled back into the defence that nothing else worked. It threw the whole balance of the team off. And even when we had Nat Phillips and Reece Williams in there and we were able to play Henderson and Fabinho in their correct positions, it all linked a little bit better. I mean, that Henderson assist at the weekend, if any other player that had been sort of world-class rated had made that, everyone would be talking about it. And we all absolutely are, because it was unbelievable. And he just goes under the radar a lot, and I don't think he necessarily minds that, because he knows his role is bigger than himself, and it's putting the team first, and that's what he always does. But his leadership skills and the presence that he has in the dressing room and on the pitch can't be underestimated, because he's such a huge figure in that team, and we've seen a lot of times when he doesn't play, the whole team suffers. So he is such an integral part of that, and yeah, definitely he's been in form. He wasn't the weekend, and long may it continue.
It's sometimes a little bit tricky to nail down what exactly Klopp's first choices are in certain areas of the pitch. And the front three is obviously something, ever since the arrival of Diogo Jota, which has been a really good debate, because there's been four real options there. But does the selection of Jota last week suggest to you that maybe he slipped above Mane in the pecking order? Because I think the conversation has moved away from Jota versus Firmino over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think that is interesting, because we a lot of the time say it's always going to be Salah, Mane, and then we're thinking, who is the third one going to be? I think I don't necessarily think it's a ranking above or below thing. I thought it was an interesting move to leave Mane out at the weekend. I don't think that's going to be the case every week. I think he will retake his position this weekend and moving forward. But it's really good to have that fourth option, and one that when he comes on into the side, you're never worried. And I think with Jota, what he brings is the ability to score goals in a lot of different ways. I mean, he's even scoring headers, which doesn't seem like it would fit his sort of his physique and stuff. And he's scoring really good headers and getting those sort of goals where they're just tap-ins or you know, they need just someone on the end of them, and he's always seems to be in the right place. So I think we're very lucky that he's had he's just come in and he's clicked straight away in our team. Does that mean that he's necessarily ranked above or below Firmino and Mane now? I don't think it's sort of a ranking thing, but more that we need the strength in depth, purely because we play so many games. We're still in the League Cup after beating Preston. We're playing, you know, Champions League, Premier League, and it all starts to ramp up around Christmas. So I think none of them are worried about getting too much game time. Although I'm sure Mane was frustrated that he didn't start in such a big game at the weekend.
I can imagine. And like, the thing is, obviously on the Firmino front, things have, as I say, changed quite a bit, as you know, with regards to him being the most vulnerable of the classic front three to Jota. But obviously there was that hat trick against Watford. But it seems almost this week that the stock's just up another level, because everybody's talking about Ronaldo and how bad he is at pressing and how bad Manchester United are pressing, and everybody's talking about how amazing Firmino is in that department. Like, when you look around at the other top four teams, are you kind of like licking your chops almost, looking at maybe the likes of Lukaku and Ronaldo, who are a more out and out number nine, who don't exactly offer that level of work rate or that little bit of something different that perhaps Roberto Firmino brings to Liverpool?
Yeah, I was actually writing my column on it this week, because I think him in the false nine position is just something incredibly unique and something we're very lucky to have, because like you said, his work rate and his sort of defensive play as well as his attacking play is out of this world. And I think Klopp said at the weekend, if some, you know, someone needs to write a book about how he's interpreted the false nine position, because it is so clever and it's so smart. And I think what I love about Firmino is he's completely unselfish. So he's often the one that makes the ball, the second to last ball, rather than the assist or rather than getting the goal. And obviously we know he can score as well. He got that hat trick, but he's very much a team player, and he likes to see he's got a really good sort of sense of where everyone around him is at all times. Like, I think that's what you're getting at the moment. These players are seeming to link really well together, and Firmino is sort of the linchpin of that. And when Firmino has a good day, generally it just seems like the rest of the team have a good day. So obviously we've been playing without an out-and-out striker for quite a while now, but you do look at other teams and you think, I think obviously Chelsea are doing very well at the moment. Ronaldo, I don't think he's the key to all Manchester United problems, but it does seem to be working really well for us. And that high pressing game is something that I'm really enjoying. And I think when you look at the game at the weekend, when Manchester United tried to press us high, they left so many gaps in defence, and that was when we were able to break through. So I think you see it done not that well, and then you think, wow, we do it really, really well in comparison to that. And how great is that?
Harriet, just you mentioned a little earlier on about Henderson's assist and how, you know, a different player would suddenly be seen as, oh, this is one of the greatest passes ever been made. Is there a bit of, like, when you tie that in with, you know, is Salah the best player in the world? Every Liverpool fan will tell you that he is, and suddenly everybody else is a bit of a debate about it. Or like the Trent Alexander-Arnold stuff for England last year. Like, is there a bit of that about the Liverpool mentality, that sort of everybody is against us and we're going to win all this despite them?
I don't think there's a mentality that everyone is against us. I think we just find it quite, I'm using probably the wrong word, but that everyone sort of rules us out. I think there was the predictions at the start of the season, and not, it was the Sky Sports pundits, and not one of them predicted that we'd win or come second in the league. I think one of them had us in second. And I think we just enjoy saying, okay, well, we're going to see what everyone else is saying and see what everyone says we're not going to do well, and then we're going to do the opposite and absolutely smash it. So I think when you're looking at players like Henderson, I'm not even sure he's that fussed about the exterior and then the conversations that are going on, because he knows how much we value him and he knows how much within the club he's valued. But I don't think we've got a sort of us against them mentality at all. I think we're just trying to do our best. And within the fan base, I think everyone is so jubilant at the moment and in such a good mood that we're just chatting about ourselves. Honestly, we're not even looking at the league at the moment or what other teams are doing. It's just a really nice elated bubble to be in after the weekend, and hopefully it continues.
Before we leave you, the Salah contract situation sort of rumbles on. What's the sense of what's delaying this, Harriet? Is it that a concern that a 29-year-old Salah is different from a 32-year-old Salah, which seems like a reasonable enough sort of discussion, or is it that he's looking for too much money? Or what's your sense of why this is delayed?
I think we always knew that this would maybe be the one that's a little bit harder to get over the line. Look, I don't think a 32-year-old Salah is a 32-year-old normal footballer, because he's 29 now and he just seems to be coming into the form of his life. And I think he's got many, many years left at the top of his game. I think ultimately we know there's a lot of different expectations that need to be met, and from his team and from Liverpool's side and what FSG wants to do. So, I mean, I personally am not aware of, you know, obviously the internal conversations or anything like that, but I just hope it gets sorted, and I think all Liverpool fans want to see it get sorted really soon. And when he's coming out and saying, you know, he wants to end his career at Liverpool and he wants to stay with us as long as possible, that only lights our sort of fire even more. So, yeah, I think it will get over the line. I think it is just taking time because they need to all agree terms. I think there's a sense of discomfort maybe from FSG's end or the club's end that, you know, changing the pay structure and everything like that. But ultimately, when you have a player like Salah and someone as good as that, I think shifting things and making exceptions is no bad thing, because he is absolutely incredible and will be at the top of his game for many years to come, we believe.
Yeah, and life would be too perfect if Salah was signed up. That'd be it'd be just too much.
Too much happiness in one week. Exactly. We can take that, I think.
Harriet, thanks a million.
Thank you so much.
Harry Pryor there from the Anfield Wrap. Now, Liverpool fans, stay tuned because you won't want to miss our next Cadbury FC roadshow. We're going behind the scenes at Anfield with the legendary Liverpool striker Robbie Fowler. We're also going to be joined by the Liverpool captain and Irish international Niamh Fahey and the former Liverpool midfielder and former Liverpool physio Richie Partridge. It's all with thanks to Cadbury FC and their club partnerships, granting you behind the scenes access at the Premier League's biggest clubs, coming soon to OTB Sports Channel. So stay tuned for all of that.